I'm sorry, Alex. I've grown young again, while you're still old. That's what this is really about, isn't it? I'm the hero again, and you've been left behind. But none of that changes how I feel about you. It doesn't mean that I don't need you anymore. I just need you in different ways these days. Stay with me, Alex, please. You remind me of who I used to be.
And you remind me of who I used to be. A man I can't be anymore. Go on, Jack. You lead and I'll follow. Just like I always have.
Oh, spare me. Any more of this old comrade stuff and I'll puke over both of you. Can we get on? We are on a schedule, remember?
Ruby, dear heart, you have no sentiment in you at all.
Damn right. It gets in the way of more important things, like killing and loot. Now get your ancient ass moving, Storm, or I'll kick it up around your ears.
Storm grunted, but set off after Random.
You'll be old yourself one day, my girl.
I very much doubt it, and I am not your girl.
That's for sure.
Mother Superior Beatrice ran across the uneven metal plain, her heavy robes flapping about her. She was boiling alive in the summer heat, and her breath was jerking painfully in her straining lungs, but she didn't dare slow down. Investigator Shoal couldn't be far behind her. There was fighting on the east side of the factory, another rebel attack by the look of it, which meant she couldn't get to the ceremony directly as she'd planned. She'd have to enter the factory through the minor west gate and make her way through the complex to the east gate and the ceremony. That might actually be for the better. Shoal would be bound to catch her on foot eventually, but she might just be able to lose the investigator in the complex's warren of corridors. She forced more strength into her legs and headed for the west gate. Most of the guards were gone, called away to the ceremony or the rebel attack, but three Jesuit commandos in their dark formal gowns and hoods were guarding the entrance. They were dark and menacing figures with guns and swords on their hips, but Beatrice didn't care. Having an investigator on your tail concentrates the mind wonderfully as to what's really important. She stumbled to a halt before the Jesuits and held up a shaking hand to forestall their questions as she tried desperately to get her breath back. Since they hadn't started shooting the moment they recognized her, presumably they didn't know about the execution order on her head, and she couldn't tell them and hope for protection. They just assumed that if an investigator was after her, she must be guilty of something. Jesuits believed everyone was guilty of something.
Someone's after me. Must be a rebel. You hold him off while I go inside for help.
Hold it,
said the most senior of the Jesuits.
We have our orders. While the screen's down, no one gets in or out to the factory. No exceptions.
But he's right behind me. He'll kill me.
Should have thought about that before you started treating rebels in your hospital. Whatever's going on here, I've no doubt you brought it on yourself. If you like, we could take you into protective custody. I'm sure we could find a nice cell for you, until the Cardinal could get around to seeing you.
Oh, hell! I haven't got time for this shit!
Beatrice kicked the senior Jesuit square in the nuts, and brandished the broken bottle in the faces of the other two. They flinched back automatically as the senior Jesuit folded up with a low moaning sound, and she dashed past them into the factory. She ran on through the corridors, trusting to her memory of the few times she'd been there before to beg for drugs and help from the complex's med lab. Now more than ever, she had to get to the ceremony. With an angry investigator and three furious Jesuits snapping at her heels, her only safety now lay in front of Toby Schreck's camera. She hurried, plunging down one corridor after another, heading deeper into the complex, afraid to look behind her. Her pursuers wouldn't risk a disruptor shot inside the factory. Too many places where an unlucky ricochet could do some really nasty damage. And then, she almost stopped running as a sudden thought struck her. The factory complex had its own internal security system, with cameras everywhere. All Shoal had to do was use her clearance to plug into the system, and she'd know immediately where her prey was and where she was heading. Which meant Beatrice had to throw Shoal off her trail before she headed for the ceremony. She ripped off her wimple and used it to wipe the sweat from her face. Think, damn it. If you want to lose yourself, head for a crowd. And the nearest crowd was in the clone quarters. They wouldn't have been invited to the ceremony. So lose the robes, blend in with the crowd just long enough to muddy her trail, and then head for the ceremony at speed. It might work. It might. She took a deep breath and ran on, her hope growing smaller and more tentative with every step. Investigator Shoal, tapped into the complex's security systems through her comm implant, overrode the passwords, and scanned for moving life signs. It took only a few moments to track the sister down, and a few more to work out where she was heading. Shoal smiled tightly, holding her anger within. The three Jesuits she'd dragged along with her mustn't know that a Sister of Mercy had actually knocked down an investigator, even if said investigator was suffering from a degenerative nerve disease. Her head was still ringing from the two heavy blows she'd taken, but she ignored it. It was just pain. She'd feel a lot better when she had the sister stretched out lifeless at her feet. She glared at the three Jesuits, one of whom was standing very carefully.
"She's heading for the clone quarters. She must not know there's only one way in and one way out. Luckily for us, she's taking the long way there. You three go ahead and seal off the far exit. I'll go in after her and drive her through to you. Think you can hang on to her this time, or shall I call for the Cardinal to come and hold your hand while you do it?"
"We'll stop her,"
said the senior Jesuit.
"If she even looks like trying anything, we'll cut her down."
"No, you won't. You'll hold her till I get there, and then I will kill her. This is investigator business. No reason for the church to be involved any further than necessary. Understood? Good. Now get going. If she beats you to the far exit, I am going to be very annoyed with you."
The three Jesuits looked at each other briefly, and then set off hurriedly down the corridor. Even a Jesuit commando had enough sense to be scared of an investigator. Shoal smiled slightly, and set off for the entrance to Clone Country. The prey had gone to ground, even if it didn't know it yet. All that remained was to flush it out. The Jesuits hadn't gotten far when the senior Jesuit stopped suddenly and looked around him. The other Jesuits stopped with him, their hands dropping to the swords at their hips. The corridor was empty and silent before them.
"What is it?"
said the most junior.
"Do you need another rest? The investigator really was most emphatic."
"Shut the hell up about the investigator and listen! I thought I heard something."
"So you did."
Jack Random appeared suddenly behind them from the corner they just passed. The senior Jesuit spun around, sword in hand, and Random kicked him squarely in the nuts. The Jesuit crumpled to the floor, and Random kicked him in the head. The Jesuit gave up consciousness with something like relief. Ruby Journey punched out the most junior Jesuit, and Storm clubbed down the third from behind while the poor fellow was still trying to figure out which direction to look in first. Ruby looked down at the three unconscious bodies.
"Jesuits. Didn't like them at school, and I don't like them now. Let's kill them and fillet them into little pieces as a general warning."
"Maybe later. Right now we need their robes, and I don't want blood on them. Besides, it's a good chance for you to exercise self-control. We don't need to kill these people. We just need their robes. Disguised as Jesuits, we can go anywhere we like in the complex, and not have to bother about dodging the security cameras."
"I suppose you're going to claim you planned this as well."
"I expected something like this to come up. I like to keep my plans flexible. Now get those robes off them."
They grinned at each other and set about acquiring the right Jesuit robes for themselves. This involved a certain amount of swapping back and forth as they tried to figure out which robe fitted who the best. None were particularly comfortable, but they finally all ended up in something they could live with. Ruby looked down at the unconscious senior Jesuit.
"Ha! So that's what they wear under these robes. I always wondered."
"I must admit, it's been a while since I saw underwear of quite such a startling color. I wonder who gets to help do up the laces."
"Save the jokes for later. The sooner we free the clones and get them moving, the better. The rebel agents inside this place risk their lives setting up the route we'll be using, and I don't want that to have been for nothing. Ruby, you've got the map. Lead the way."
"I haven't got the map. You've got the map."
"No, I haven't."
"I've got the map. Dear God, how did you ever manage without me, Jack?"
Beatrice knew where the clone quarters were, but she'd never been in them before. Not many had. Clones were kept strictly separate from real people, but the entrance was unlocked, unguarded, almost as though they'd been expecting her. Or someone. The thought almost brought her to a halt, but in the end she pressed on. She had to. There was nowhere else she could go. Beyond the barriers and the electric doors, Clone Country was stark and utilitarian. Beatrice had thought she'd known what to expect from tales she'd heard from clone and rebel patients, but nothing could have prepared her for the reality. There were no rooms or living quarters. The clones lived in steel cages and pens, stacked together like some great battery farm. There wasn't an inch of spare space, apart from the single, narrow, central aisle she was walking down. There was a powerful, almost overpowering smell of bodies packed close together. Beatrice was used to the medical stenches of the hospital tent, but even so, she had to fight an urge to hold a hand over her mouth and nose. As she passed the steel pens, faces came forward to watch her. Some were missing eyes or ears or noses. Some had no lower jaws, rotted away by the forces they worked with. They made quiet, mewling sounds like tortured kittens. Beatrice came to a halt in spite of herself. There was nothing she could do to help them, and they couldn't help her. She couldn't blend in with them, which meant she had to get out of Clone Country before the investigator found her. But she couldn't just walk on and pretend she hadn't seen the suffering. She looked around her, her hands clenched into fists, caught in a quandary that her conscience wouldn't release her from. And then she heard approaching footsteps and gripped her broken bottle tightly, her heart racing. She'd hesitated too long. Shoal had found her. She looked wildly about her, but she knew there was no point in running. She was exhausted, and Shoal was an investigator. Beatrice swallowed hard and stood her ground. She knew fighting wouldn't get her anywhere, but she was damned if she'd go down without a struggle. She looked at the damaged faces of the watching clones and gestured for them to move back.
Look away. You don't want to see this.
And then the three-robed Jesuits appeared suddenly before her and skidded to a halt, as though they hadn't been expecting to find her there. Beatrice showed them her broken bottle and tried hard to sound defiant rather than pathetic.
Well, come on, then. You don't think I'm going to make it easy for you, do you? I'll make you kill me before I let you hand me over to that investigator cow.
There seems to be some misunderstanding here,
said one of the Jesuits mildly. He pushed back his cowl to reveal a warm face with a kindly scowl.
I am Alexander Storm, currently working with the rebels of Technos III. Might I inquire who you are?
Mother Superior Beatrice, of the Sisters of Mercy. How do I know you are who you say you are?
Well, the fact that we haven't tried to kill you should be a point in our favor. Do you think you could lower that fearsome-looking bottle? I'm sure we'd all feel a lot safer.
He gave her a smile of unimpeachable charm, and she slowly lowered the broken bottle. Storm nodded approvingly.
Allow me to present my two associates, Ruby Journey and Jack Random.
Beatrice blinked at the last name, and watched intently as the other two Jesuits pushed back their cowls. The woman she didn't know from a hole in the ground, except by reputation, but everyone knew of Jack Random. He looked a lot younger than she'd expected, but it was definitely him. She relaxed suddenly, her breath going out of her in a rush, as she finally felt something like safe again.
Dear Lord, it's really you. What the hell are you doing here?
Freeing the clones. Would you care to help? I get the feeling you'd be a lot safer in our company.
Damn right. I've got a bloody investigator snapping at my heels. Someone high up wants me dead. But I can't help you. The Sisters of Mercy must remain neutral.
If someone sent an investigator after you, I think we can safely assume your neutrality has already been compromised. Besides, can you just stand by and let this horror continue?
Beatrice looked at the watching clones in their pens, packed together like animals.
No. I can't.
Good for you, sister. And don't worry, we'll protect you.
Is that right? Now that I would like to see.
They all spun around to find Investigator Shoal standing right behind them, her sword in her hand. She looked very relaxed and utterly deadly.
Good thing I tried to contact the Jesuits and smelled a rat when I couldn't get an answer. I started out after a rogue Sister of Mercy, and now I have three infamous rebels to kill as well. One of them, the legendary Jack Random. God is good sometimes, isn't he? Now who wants to die first?
Ruby looked at Random.
Let me have her. I didn't have time to enjoy killing that investigator before.
Sorry, we haven't got the time now.
Random already had his disruptor in hand, pointing at Shoal.
Say goodnight, investigator.
Ruby glared at him.
Don't you dare, Jack Random. If you kill her, I'll never speak to you again. I've always wanted to go one-on-one with an investigator.
Random started to shake his head, and Shoal's sword whipped around, the flat of the blade slapping the gun out of his hand. Random shook his tingling fingers gingerly, looked at the coldly smiling investigator, and nodded to Ruby.
I never could refuse you anything, my dear. But make it quick. We've got work to do.
I don't know what you people have been smoking, but I'm pretty sure it must be illegal. Nothing else could get you this far from reality. Let's do it, girl. Then after I've killed you, I'll kill your friends and take back Jack Random's head as a trophy.
In your dreams. Let's do it.
They slammed together, head to head, blades flying. No quarter asked or given. They stamped and lunged, and their swords clashed together, sparks flying in the still air. They were both supremely talented, trained to great skill by harsh circumstances, and the speed at which they came together and sprang apart was exhilarating. Ruby laughed breathlessly, her sword everywhere at once. This was what she lived for, when she felt most alive. She could have boosted, but didn't. She could have called on unnatural strength and speed, but she chose not to. She wanted to beat the investigator in a fair fight, to prove she was the best. Shoal swung her sword double-handed in an arc that would have beheaded Ruby if it had connected, but Ruby ducked under it at the last moment. She took the fight to Shoal, pressing the attack as hard as she could, and Shoal just stood there and took it, not retreating a step. Their swords hammered together, drawing blood here and there from minor wounds, neither able to gain the upper hand for long. But Ruby was getting tired and just a little slower, and Shoal wasn't. Ruby was a bounty hunter, trained as a fighter in the hardest of schools, but Shoal, even with her illness, was an investigator. And slowly, foot by foot, she began to push Ruby back. Shoal's blade drew blood again and again, and Ruby couldn't touch her. It slowly came to her that she'd finally found her better. And just maybe she was going to die if she didn't boost. The boost would give her the edge she needed.
No. I can do this. I can. Not some gift from an alien device.
Shoal swung her sword with unexpected strength and slammed Ruby off balance. She staggered back, trying to recover, and Shoal drew back her blade for a killing thrust. And Ruby's blade shot forward, driven by boosted strength and speed she hadn't called for, and punched through Shoal's chest and out her back. Blood gushed from the investigator's mouth, and she sank to her knees with a look of utter surprise on her face. Ruby jerked her sword out, and Shoal fell forward and lay still.
No! No, I didn't want that!
Ruby hacked at the body with her sword again and again, cursing and spitting. She hadn't called on the boost. It had come unbidden, unwanted. For better or worse, the maze wouldn't let her be merely human anymore. She finally stopped herself and stood hunched over the mutilated body, panting for breath.
Is she always like this?
Not always. Ruby, are you all right?
No, I don't think so.
Ruby sheathed her sword without cleaning it, then stopped, raised her head, and looked about her.
Hold everything. I'm starting to get a bad feeling about this place.
Random looked at her thoughtfully. He took her feelings seriously. He had them himself sometimes. You mean right here in the clone quarters?
No, more widely spread than that.
Storm looked around nervously.
Could there be guards on the way?
I don't know. Jack, join with me. We're stronger together.
Their eyes met, and their minds joined. Their faces became blank masks as they concentrated, their minds leaping up and out to test their surroundings. Beatrice looked at Storm.
I didn't know they were espers.
They're not. But don't ask me what they are.
Random and Ruby fell back into their heads and looked at each other incredulously.
I don't believe it.
What? Don't believe what?
There are explosives everywhere, all through the factory.
At least three main groupings, set to do maximum damage and time to go off soon. Any one would have been enough to bring Star Drive production to a halt, but God knows what this many will do.
Right, that's it. We're out of here. Alex, use the codes we were given and get these pens open. We've got to get the clones out of here while there's still time.
Wait! You do know they're executing your people at the ceremony?
Sure, don't worry. We'll get to them next.
You won't have time. Their execution's been brought forward to be sure of going out on prime time.
Damn. You can't rely on anyone these days. Right. Sister Beatrice, you and Alex get the clones out of here. Since they're in clear danger from the explosives, you can do that without risking your sisterhood's neutrality. Ruby and I will take care of the prisoners.
How?
I'm working on it.
Thrills, chills, and last-minute rescues. Don't you just love being an outlaw?
In the beating heat outside the factory complex, the ceremony was going well. Everyone had remembered their lines, Kasser hadn't hit anybody yet, and Toby Schreck and Flynn were covering it all, transmitting live to audiences all across the Empire. Important people were watching, not least the Empress, and everyone else was watching in the hopes of a major cock-up or rebel attack like before. Toby kept up a murmured running commentary during the slow bits and suffered through the longer speeches. If they didn't get to the execution soon, people might start losing interest. A new star drive might be just what the Empire needed, but it didn't actually make great viewing in itself. All in all, though, things were going better than Toby had expected. As requested, Half a Man was staying in plain view and not retreating into the background as usual. He wasn't actually doing or saying anything, but his public appearances were so rare these days that any new sighting was an event. Toby had put as much effort into convincing Half a Man as he had into persuading Flynn not to wear his best party frock. Good ratings needed all the help they could get. The Wolves were standing right at the front, each with their own proper spouse, smiling and nodding and generally being nice to each other. People had won drama awards for less. There was an underlying air of tension among them, but that was to be expected, and hopefully wouldn't show up on camera. Toby couldn't help noticing that they kept checking their watches when they thought no one was looking. Presumably they were getting impatient for the executions, too. Toby smiled to himself. They didn't know about his planned dramatic plea for clemency. The ranks of church troops and factory security staff were still standing rigidly to attention and made a nice spectacle. Only a few more had fainted from the heat, and the audience wouldn't mind that. It added a touch of drama and made them more sympathetic to the audience. Toby had considered bribing a few to mock faint, but had rightly decided the heat would do the job for him. The prisoners looked like rabble, animals in chains, presumably arranged quite deliberately. The Wolves never missed a good propaganda opportunity. Daniel Wolfe stepped forward to make the final speech, reading from a teleprompter with all the warmth and spontaneity of a particularly dense block of wood. Flynn moved in a little closer to frame the man's head and shoulders, to hide the fact that Daniel's hands were twitching nervously. Toby listened carefully, nodding now and again. It was a good speech, almost as good as the stuff he used to write. He looked across at the ramp protruding from the factory entrance. The first finished star drive was waiting in the wings, great ugly thing, ready to make an entrance on cue. Toby allowed himself a small glow of satisfaction. With work like this to his credit, he'd be able to pick and choose from among the very best journalistic assignments. It was a good show, if a little safe and uncontroversial, to end his time on Technos 3. Pity it couldn't have had a touch more drama, though. Jack Random and Ruby Journey, hidden and anonymous inside their borrowed Jesuit robes with the hoods pulled well forward, strode haughtily past the security cameras and the few guards left on duty. Most just nodded them through. You didn't argue with Jesuits unless you wanted to spend your next weekend on some really inventive and humiliating penance. Random kept up a quiet muttering of what he hoped were suitably religious-sounding utterances, made broadly gestured crosses over anything that moved or looked like it might, and generally kept his head down. He'd always enjoyed those parts of his schemes that involved disguises. It appealed to the frustrated actor in him. Though he sometimes thought his whole life as the professional rebel had been his greatest role. Ruby just trudged along beside him, keeping her hands away from her concealed weapons and trying not to break into her usual long-legged stride. In her own way, she was acting too. Being quiet, calm, and subservient didn't come at all naturally to her. Much as he loved her, Random had to admit Ruby wasn't really what you'd call versatile. If you couldn't hit it, steal it, or sleep with it, she was often lost for an alternative. They strolled unconcernedly out of the complex and took up a position on the edge of things. Kasser shot them a venomous glare for being late, but left it at that. Everyone else conspicuously ignored them. Daniel Wolfe was still making his speech, badly. Random looked unobtrusively over at the rebel prisoners waiting for execution, and scowled at the chains holding them in place. Heavy chains with thick steel links and blocky padlocks you couldn't hope to pick with anything less than a disruptor. Random's scowl deepened. No one had mentioned chains. On the other side of the crowd, Toby Schreck was also studying the prisoners, taking in the details. Many showed the blood and bruises of recent beatings, even the children. All eyes were glazed from heavy-duty tranquilizers so they wouldn't be any trouble. Not enough to knock them out, of course. That would take all the fun out of the executions. Toby frowned and looked around as Daniel stopped speaking suddenly. His teleprompter had broken down, and Stephanie was glaring meaningfully at Toby. So, rather than have Daniel look like a complete divot because he didn't know his own speech, Toby gestured for Flynn to shut down his camera. They'd blame it on technical difficulties later. And it might be handy to have the high and mighty Stephanie Wolfe owing them a favor. Flynn moved over to join Toby, and they both looked at the prisoners.
I can't believe they're going to kill the children, too. I just wish there was something we could do.
There is. Once Daniel's finally finished his speech, I'll do an on-camera appeal for clemency, for the children, straight to the Empress.
You've got a good heart, Chief, but it won't work. Cass has got too much of his pride tied up in this, after his people got their heads handed to him down in the tunnels. He'll just say this is a church matter. No one messes with the church these days, not if they're fond of breathing. And he'd probably have you executed too, just for asking. No, boss. All we can do is film what happens and hope the audience's hearts will be touched enough to stop him doing it again. I wouldn't put money on it, though. They do so love their blood sports these days.
I used to be a big fan of the arena. Season ticket, good seat. But that was different. At least the gladiators had a fighting chance, mostly. This is just slaughter. And I've seen so much blood here. I don't know, Flynn. I never thought of myself as political, but this...
There's nothing we can do, boss. Just tough it out, do our job, and hope we end up somewhere more civilized for our next assignment.
I wanted to cover a war, because wars are where the stories are. I never expected anything like this.
No one ever does. That's why we have to keep covering them.
Someone got the teleprompter working again by kicking it somewhere sensitive. Flynn resumed filming. Daniel finished his speech, and everyone applauded politely. Daniel nodded to Kasser and stepped back to allow him to introduce the executions. The Cardinal faced the camera with a forbidding stare and smiled coldly.
This day, 327 rebel prisoners will die as an example to those who would stand against the authority of the established church and Her Imperial Majesty, the Empress Lionstone 14. The majority will be electrocuted through their chains, but first, their leaders will be beheaded, one by one, as retribution for all the faithful who have died in the struggle here. Stand forward, executioners, and do your duty.